everyone, and welcome to Minute 12 of Movie Rap Minute, the daily podcast where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy Planes, Trains, and Automobiles 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Sean German of the Next Scene podcast. Welcome back to the show, Sean.
Well, it's my flight is now showing as delayed, so I guess I've got time to do another minute.
Just don't talk to the guy next to you.
No, I don't talk to strangers.
Well, the whole idea is to make them no longer strangers.
Oh, you're one of those.
No, I'm not actually.
Yeah. Trust me. I'm definitely in a world of Dells. I'm a Neil. I've never gotten off any form of transportation, whether it was a plane, a train, a bus. I've never left the vehicle and known more people than I did when I got on.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I did that. I remember when I was a kid, I remember my parents took me to the park and something like that. And I came back and I had like these two new friends that I just randomly met and stuff like that. I mean, I never talked to these kids ever again, you know, but I was a very outgoing young child. How's that? I reached a point where I just don't do that anymore. You know, anyone who finds me, I'm either, you know, I got my head in a book or in my laptop or something, you know, I'm not talking to people around me, yeah. Which is why I actually don't like to even travel with people I know for that very reason. So,
yep,
exactly. So minute 12 begins with Del continuing to talk Neil's ear off and ends with Neil trying to nudge Del back into his own space.
Yeah.
So as we were talking about yesterday, they're sitting on the plane and Neil is trying to just read his GQ, you know, his article about Kevin Costner that a friend of his wrote or whatever it is, or pretending to do that. Who knows? And Del just wants to talk to him. And he keeps asking all these questions. And as much as Neil tries to brush him off, it just doesn't work. So the last thing he told Del was he's busy. And Del says, yeah, you know, nothing grinds my gears worse than some chowderhead who doesn't know when to keep his big trap shut. You catch me running off the mouth? Just give me a poke in the chops. And then he begins to grunt as he does that. So I've seen this movie so many times, and I never thought about the dialogue, about what he's saying. Okay, now, I mean, you're from New England, but do you know what a chowderhead is?
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with that saying, as much as, you know, I'm a big fan of the New England chowder. I guess it's just like a jerk or a moron. I don't know if I've heard that phrase much outside of this film.
Okay, well, so I went and did a little bit of a search to see what the phrase chowderhead actually means. So the first thing it says, it's not something that came from either New England or Manhattan, which most people think it deals with. That most people believe that it's, you're basically saying that someone has clam chowder for brains or something like that. But no, that's not what they're talking about. According to Merriam-Webster, it's actually a mispronunciation of jolterhead, which was a derivative of a 16th century insult, which you called someone a jolt head or a blockhead, you know, someone with a heavy head.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And somehow that turned into chowderhead.
Yeah. So in the Urban Dictionary, they actually say that it's a derogatory term for someone from Eastern Massachusetts, because of the amount of chowder the area provides and ingests. It's also a derogatory term used by Yankee fans to describe Red Sox fans. And it also could just be someone who's calling someone else stupid or maybe an airhead or something like that. So, yeah.
Del's got a lot of sayings, and we'll get a couple of them later in the week and throughout the film. The other thing, so the chowder head is interesting. The other thing he says, you catch me running off at the mouth, just give me a poke in the chops.
And I thought we'll get there.
Okay.
We'll get there.
Oh, sorry. I don't want to jump ahead.
You're jumping ahead a few seconds. All right. So continuing with chowder. So another phrase of chowder, it's a popular term for cocaine.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I did not know that.
In the southern and mid-Atlantic regions, a chowder is someone who is a cokehead, you know, who uses cocaine. Yeah.
Okay.
And chowderheadism is a mindset amongst residents of coastal Massachusetts. that results in cramming people, objects, or explanations into insufficient small confines, whether they be tangible or not. An example, they say, taking into account the game of baseball and space needed to play in, the design of Fenway Park clearly shows a chowderheadism on the part of James McLaughlin Construction Company, because there's not enough room for everybody there. They're just cramming them in. So okay. I found that interesting, that, you know, the connections between those.
Yeah.
Now, what about the phrase grind my gears? You ever hear that one before?
I've heard, yeah, grind my gears. I've heard that. I haven't given much too much thought to it. If you've worked with anything mechanical, when the gears get ground, yeah, basically means it's going to stop working. So I kind of understand that.
Right. So based on the research that I did, there's a lot of people who believe that it comes from The Family Guy, but the origination of this phrase is from this movie.
So really?
That's what I found. Again, it could be that that's incorrect. Oh. As we know with the internet, certain things you can, you know, you can find, and you just, there's no way of verifying whether it's the truth or not. So it's a little bit of a problem. So now we'll get to what you just were talking about with chops. Okay. Now, I always thought that if you're jabbing someone in the chops, you're jabbing them in the ribs. That was my definition of chops, because you've heard it a lot. It's something that you hear often in movies and in books and stuff like that, where people say, I'm going to bust them in the chops or something like that. You know, here's poke them in the chops. So yeah. I actually looked it up, and chops is actually either the jaw or mouth.
Right. And that's kind of confused me, because that's what I thought when you say, like, oh, you know, punch someone in the chops is like, you know, punch them in the jaw. Whereas, like, yeah, if someone's being annoying or you know, falling asleep and is snoring in your ear on your shoulder, then kind of poke them in the ribs, poke them in the stomach.
Yeah, exactly.
So the poke in the chops, I thought, was an odd saying.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an odd saying. There's no question about that. I mean, but as we know, Dell has some very odd sayings that we're going to hear throughout this entire movie. And this goes along with it, by the way that he says it. And so another explanation about chops, which another use of chops, which makes more sense and makes it explain the fact that it is talking about the jaws or the mouth, is it's the fleshy covering of the jaws, a dog licking its chops. So that I've heard before.
Yeah, licking.
Licking your chops. So basically you are licking your mouth, your lips, jaw, something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So is Del saying, yeah, poke them in the jaw, poke them in the jowls?
He's basically saying
the chops.
He's saying just punch me. The script actually talks about this a little bit also. We'll get there later in this minute. And the whole time, Neil is just trying to avoid having to talk to this guy. And then he starts like scratching himself, and he's making motions as if he's like choking or stuff like that, which is just really funny. It doesn't reach the point where he's like, you know, sticking his finger in his mouth, showing that, you know, just gag me or whatever. But you can see how uncomfortable he is by this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is kind of what I was referring to yesterday, kind of where it's a little bit more than just being uncomfortable with, or, you know, just not wanting to talk with the guy. He's kind of like pulling at his collar, like either he's hot under the collar or he's having trouble breathing. You know, he just seems very uncomfortable in this position. And that's even before, you know, I'm talking about like the first 10 seconds of this minute. That's even before Del starts to disrobe, you know, starts to take off his shoes and other things, where it's going to get a lot more uncomfortable and it's going to get a lot harder to breathe, I'm sure.
That's true. So, as you just mentioned, Del then starts unlacing his shoes and takes his shoes off and is in complete ecstasy by the way that he's taking off his shoes, and he's rubbing his feet, and he says, that feels good. Oh God, I'm telling you, my dogs are barking today.
My dogs are barking today.
Now, have you ever heard that phrase before?
Now, I've heard that phrase. I don't know if you did any research on the origin, you know, referring to feed
John,
as
do
dogs, which I mean, I've used that phrase myself, but I'm pretty sure I got it from this film. Right, now referring to the feet as dogs that are barking.
I've never used that phrase before. And so basically dogs are barking means that your feet hurt. It's an old expression typically associated with the South and especially concentrated around the Appalachian mountain chain. Older usage didn't connote smelly or dirty feet, just sore feet. So originally people just referred to it as sore feet, but now they talk about, you know, maybe it's your feet smell a little bit. Now you have the whole idea of shoes, hush puppies, right? It's named with reference to this expression, my dogs are barking, because in the case of hush puppies, they're supposedly so comfortable that you can quiet your puppies, basically saying that wearing our shoes are going to stop your feet from hurting. So it's pretty interesting. I mean, the original person who used the phrase was a journalist who wrote in the New York Evening Journal in the 1800s by the name of T. Dorgan. And they say that he actually coined a lot of different phrases, often using rhyming slang. But the phrase, it originally was dog meat, which then became feet. So, you know, it used to be my dog meat is barking or something like that. I don't know. So the term my dogs are barking is also popularized throughout the world by American servicemen. For some reason in the Army, that's something that's very popular too. Right. I'm not really sure the whole idea of the dog meat. We talked last week about hot dogs and dog meat, but I don't think there's really much of a connection to shoes and dog meat at this point.
Yeah.
And I mean, he takes off his shoes. Now, I don't know if you noticed this last week when they were sitting and waiting in the terminal, he also had his shoes off and was walking around bare, in his socks. Before I started doing research for this one. So this isn't even the first time.
Yeah, I had not noticed that either. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So he's a guy who likes to take off his shoes. And, well, I mean, again, if he's a salesman, that means he's walking around a lot. So his dogs must really be barking.
Yeah, I guess he probably did done a lot of walking that day, particularly being in Manhattan and lugging that the case around his trunk. So it can't smell good. But I like that when that he had his shoes off earlier. That's one thing John Hughes is really good about. And you see it in other films like Home Alone, where there's a lot of callbacks, a lot of little things that, you know, could be nothing, but then they end up coming back, at least being referred to later in the film.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things, you know, like I'm sure you covered it. We're 10 minutes, not even 15 minutes into the film so far, but there's already been multiple things like that, Neil tripped over the case or the trunk while he was in Manhattan and seeing the shower curtain rings and the puddle and other things that are coming back. So it makes sense that we would have seen Dell without his shoes in the airport. Yeah. Again, I didn't notice it, but absolutely makes sense for the character and for John Hughes to think of that.
Yeah, completely. So at this point, he begins taking off his socks, and he's now in even greater ecstasy than he was before. Oh. He starts moaning by taking his socks off. Yeah. And you can clearly see that Neil is appalled by all this, you know,
as he should be.
And then Del starts swinging his socks around in like a circular motion. I mean, can you get more annoying than that?
I mean, that's almost something that you like, is this guy doing it on purpose? Is he purposely trying to be annoying? Like, I could see, he's been walking around all day. His feet are sore. He wants to take his shoes off. Okay. That's sort of just a natural thing that he might thoughtlessly do. But the waving the socks around, like, how does that make him feel better?
Yeah, I don't know.
it just makes the people around him feel worse.
Right. And also, if my foot was bothering me, I don't think necessarily taking off the sock is going to make it that much freer and feel better. I'd want to start, I don't know, maybe start rubbing your foot at that point. I don't know. So we also get a brief shot of the third person in their row. So it's a famous actor who's been in a lot of things. Bill Irwin, exactly. He was born on the 2nd of December, 1914, and he passed away of old age on the 29th of December, 2010, at the age of 96. He had been in 191 different TV shows, his different credits. He was in over a course of 56 years, from 1950 to 2006. He has 50 movie credits, which over a period of 60 years, from 1941 to 2001. He was actually in three John Hughes movies. He's in this movie. He's in Home Alone, and he's in She's Having a Baby.
Yeah.
And for me, he's always the most famous, besides, obviously, seeing him here, is he was in two episodes of Seinfeld, where he played an old man that they were volunteering with, and the whole goiter episode. I don't know if you remember that or not.
No, I don't remember that.
I
mainly know him from from this scene, from this film. He did an episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation. I remember him from that, and then also was in an episode of Married with Children.
Oh, wow.
Back in the 80s. And I remember that. So, but I mean, like, you pretty much just throw a dart, put up the name of every TV series ever on the wall and throw a dart, and you probably hit a series that that Bill was in at least an episode or two.
Yeah, probably. Probably. That's very true. And then the lights go off in the cabin, which to me is very strange. I mean, when I fly, I usually fly international, so it's a long flight, and there is a certain point where they will turn off the lights. But if you're flying from New York to Chicago, even if you're being diverted to some other place, which we'll talk about tomorrow where he's being diverted to, but you'd think that they're not going to have everyone go to sleep. It's not the middle of the night. We'll talk a little bit later in the week about the exact time of where we think things are, but let's say, I mean, they're according to O'Hare, the flight at the beginning, the shot at the beginning of yesterday's episode, they're supposed to come in, I think, at what was it, 8:30, 9:30?
Was it 8:45, 8:30 something? Yeah.
No, it was originally supposed to be 6:45, and I think it was supposed to come in now at 8:30. So we're not talking about a very late flight. So for them to turn off the lights, to have a completely pitch dark airplane is a little strange for me. I mean, again, it's done for the purpose of the jokes that they're about to give us, but still.
Yeah. Yeah, because I imagine they the lights are on for takeoff. They take off, the lights are on for a little bit, they turn off the lights for maybe a half hour before, okay, we're on our approach. If things had gone well, we're on our approach to O'Hare, and we're turning the lights back on. So certainly not enough time for you to get a good night's rest. But
exactly,
it works in the context of the film. For me, at least, it gives the impression of the passage.
Completely,
of time.
I agree with you. I'm just saying that logically, it doesn't make sense.
But yeah, logically, it is. A little bit.
So then we get a shot of Neil sitting. He's got his glasses on. He's reading, and we have Bill Irwin sleeping on his shoulder.
And he's getting it from both sides. We've got Bill Irwin in the window seat, who's kneeling and snoring,
and coughing.
And then we've got
he's coughing on him.
And
I mean, again, this movie was made 35 years ago, so they didn't know anything about COVID at that time, but nowadays, if you were sitting on a plane and someone's coughing on you, you're not going to be too pleased.
Oh yeah, no one on this flight is wearing a mask. Like,
exactly,
thinking it's bad.
I still watch old movies and can't understand why people are hugging one another and why people are so close to each other. I keep saying, separate yourselves a little bit of space. But I guess that's the way the world has changed us. The way that we think of things. And Neil then just like looks over and sees Bill Irwin on his shoulder. He's like startled when he starts coughing. and then he's not happy. And then he looks over at Del and he sees Del fast asleep, completely comfortable, with his, you know, just looking straight with his eyes closed, but facing Neil's face the entire time. And we'll have to wait until tomorrow to find out what actually happens with that.
Yeah. I mean, this is pretty much my nightmare, because I'm like Neil, where I, you know, he doesn't wake up, the old man. He doesn't, you know, poke him in the chops or anything to get this guy off his shoulder. But he's clearly very uncomfortable, where I'm like in a similar position where I don't want to interact with a stranger any more than I have to. But I also don't want this person coughing on my shoulder.
No, like that. Definitely not.
This is a horrible situation. Poor Neil. The guy just wants to get home to his family for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Do you have anything else for this minute itself? We have other things to talk about, but about what we just talked about. Do you have anything? Do you want to add to those?
No, I think
all right. Okay. Well, so the differences in the script, there are some differences, which we'll talk about in detail in a few minutes when we get to that also. But basically, there's the whole – Dill starts talking about smoking. He talks about – basically, his entire line about the chowderhead is, nothing grinds my gears worse than some chowderhead who doesn't know when to keep his big trap shut. They've got no smoking signs. They ought to have no talking signs. Which probably would have fit in for Dill also at that point. I understand why why they would have said that. Mm-hmm. Now, he also says, if you catch me running off at the mouth, give me a good poke in the nose. You know, he doesn't say poke in the chops. And then Neil pulls out his briefcase, which is like a crushed briefcase, and you see all his papers falling out and stuff like that. And then Dell starts asking him what happened to your briefcase. He says, look like a vehicle ran over it. Now, we know that happened because of Dell last week. And, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he basically asks, then Dell starts quizzing him on whether he bought the briefcase or got it as a gift. And so Neil doesn't really want to respond to him. So Dell then basically says, oh, mine too is a gift. I got it from the company for getting the shower ring contract for the U.S. Navy. And then he says, you know how many rings that baby was worth? And Neil goes, I have no idea. And he says, $37 million. Neil smiles and opens his report. So then Dell says, I figure that over the next years, several millions of sailors are going to use those showers with our rings. And if they take the time to inquire about the rings and they feel they're good rings when they get out of the service and consider shower rings, they'll select ours. So again, it's completely understood why they cut this out. There's no reason why it should be here anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they actually have a shot in Neil's house with a conversation between Neil's daughter and his wife, where, you know, the daughter asks, when's he going to be home? And the answer is soon. And then she asks, will I see Grandma and Grandpa first, or will I see Daddy first? And then she says, Grandma and Grandpa aren't coming until tomorrow afternoon. Daddy will be here when you wake up, which we know doesn't happen. And then she wants to make sure that he'll come to her school to see her in the pageant, which is something that will come up later in the movie when we talk about the pageant. And then they have a whole discussion about ordering special meals, which, again, we'll talk about in a few moments, because there is something that we're going to – basically, there is one long deleted scene that's 2.5 minutes that Sean and I – we'll discuss briefly. We're not going to go too much into detail of it, even though we could, and we probably shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the rest of the script deals with that, except for the fact that we have another shot in the first class cabin where the stewardess and Larry have a conversation, and you can see that there's like tons of different, you know, you see how they treat people in first class, and you see that there's a lot of empty seats.
Mm-hmm.
So. Right. So basically we have this deleted scene, which for some reason, it's the only deleted scene that has ever been released for this movie. It's a, I think, 2:34 deleted scene, and it takes place entirely on the plane, and it shows basically a bunch of different things that happen. I understand why they cut it. You know, we get to see that the plane is completely packed and that the stewardess is busy and everyone's bothering her and everything like that. And she basically says, all right, everybody, if you don't quit asking me for stuff, nobody's getting anything. And then we see them have their meal.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not going to go too much into detail about this. Maybe we'll do a special episode at some point talking about how specifically everything that happens here. But basically, the food is terrible. Neil doesn't like what he got. He gets this lasagna that apparently doesn't look like lasagna anymore. And Del basically tells him that that's because they keep reheating it. And we see the food that Del has. He's gotten, and Del then gives an explanation as to what type of food he orders where. He says, it depends on the airline. He orders special meals. In this airline, I get seafood salad. On American, I go with the kosher plate. In United, I say I'm a youngster and I get the kitty plate, which is a hot dog, potato chips, a gherkin, and a little package of Oreos. Do you know what a gherkin is?
I think it's like a small pickle. Yeah.
Yes. Right. I looked that up. I had no idea what a gherkin was. And so they have this little interaction about the food. Neil basically decides that he doesn't want to eat it. And then Del starts giving away his food. Del takes part of it for himself. He gives a little bit of it to Bill Irwin. And then he wants to give away Neil's brownie, and Neil doesn't want to give away the brownie. And then we get like this mass of hair from the person seated in front of him that just completely covers the brownie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And at this point, he's completely grossed out. Now, I don't know how that could really happen in real life, because even if someone has very long hair, what are the chances that they're going to shift their hair to be on the back of the airplane recliner?
Yeah, this.
So it is pretty, it's gross. It's gross looking at it. And then Del and Bill Irwin argue over who's going to get it. And they decide to split the brownie between the two of them. So, yeah, I mean, it adds a little bit more humor to the whole trip that Neil and Del are taking, but it doesn't really add much to the story itself. It drags along a little too much. And I think it's just, along with a lot of the parts of the script that have been cut out,
yeah,
there are things that just drag on too much. And, you know, we want to get to the point of what's happening, and we don't want to hate the characters. We want to still find them. We want to still find Del lovable, even though he can be annoying at certain points. But if they were to go too much into it, I think we would start to despise him and you know, not like him at all.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with it being deleted. And listeners, if you're not familiar with the scene, I know for me it came on my DVD copy of the film, had it as an extra. It's also up on YouTube. If you haven't seen it, just like search for Planes, Trains, and Automobiles deleted scene. But I could kind of see where... you know, it gives us a lot of things we already know, kind of telling us that, you know, Del's the road warrior for, you know, the salesman who does a lot of travel. Of course, he would know what meal to ask for on which airline. It kind of gives us more of Neil as kind of the put upon victim of circumstance and, you know, kind of make us sympathetic to him, to all the things that are happening, going on. And also going back to Del, giving us someone who doesn't have... I guess very comfortable in social situations and doesn't have much of a filter and kind of doesn't think much of, oh, you're not going to eat that. Okay. I'll take it and I'll split it with this complete stranger that we have over here. And then, a little bit presumptuous. So when, you know, Neil says he's not interested in the meal and Del goes, well, you know, kind of jumps to, the brownie. I don't know if, you know, saying you're not interested in the entree, I don't know if that automatically, if one should assume that applies to dessert and the brownie as well. But, you know, Del isn't one much for boundaries. But we kind of, we know that about Del. We kind of get hammered with that message again and again. So we don't necessarily need to see it one more time. But we get, you know, a little bit more of Bill Irwin. I mean, he's got... Other than basically sleeping and coughing on Neil's shoulder, we don't get much of that old man character. So we get, you know, it's a little bit more of him. That's nice,
especially with a few points where he doesn't quite hear well.
Yeah,
you know, they say to him, "Excuse me, sir, would you like a bun?" And he says, "Yeah, it's fun. Flying's fun." And he goes, "No, no, no. Would you like the bun?" And he goes, "What's that?" He says, "I'm offering you a bun. Speak up. You want the bun?" No, I just...
Yeah, but so it's a fun little scene. I kind of see how, why it was deleted. Also, you'd have to, I mean, if they decided to include it, they'd have to cut out the previous bits with you know, with everyone sort of sleeping on Neil's shoulder, because, you know, it's even with weather, it's not that far. Even going to Wichita, it's not that long of a flight to think that they're going to have meal service and they're going to have time to turn out all the lights so everyone can go to sleep. Right. The flight, you know, this is not a, you know, transatlantic or coast to coast flight. You kind of do one or the other. And yeah, I mean, the little bits with, you know, kind of leaning on Neil's shoulder and him being uncomfortable in the middle seat is accomplished, you know, much more efficiently with the lights out and people sleeping than it is with, yeah, it's about 3.5 minutes, this scene. So, it's good. It's amusing, but can totally agree and, you know, see why it got cut and, you know, think it's the movie is perfect without it. So it's fine.
Yeah, completely. I completely agree with that. All right. You have anything else for this minute?
No, I think that covers it. Covers my notes for this minute.
So today we will once again give everyone a little short story of Off the Beaten Track, where myself or my guest will tell us a little adventure or misadventure that they might have had at some point in their lives, whether it's traveling by plane, by train, by automobile, or any other method of travel. So, Sean, you have another one for everybody?
Yeah, I have another kind of flight-related story. I live up in New England. I was down in Delaware a few years ago on business and I'm originally from New Jersey and still most of my family is in New Jersey. We had, sort of a family emergency. So I was in Delaware on business, was planning I'd flown down. I'd rented a car down in Delaware to get back and forth for, my business stuff. Was scheduled to fly back to New England at the end of the week. I had, family thing came up. I had to change. I pushed out my flights, figured, let me stay down here, keep the rental car an extra couple of days, drive up to New Jersey, do the family stuff I needed to do. And during that time, so my brother-in-law, my sister's husband, was planning on going on a trip, and he had he had to postpone his flight by a couple of days as well. But then he was flying out of the Philadelphia airport, which was the same airport I was going to be flying out of. So he's like, hey, you're going to be up in New Jersey. We're doing the family stuff. We both need to go to the airport. Can you give me a ride? So I'm like, oh, absolutely. So we're driving down from North Jersey, heading down to the Philly airport. And I think we're most of the way there. We're almost to Philadelphia, and he's kind of preparing for his flight. He's going through and making sure he has everything he needs, and he realizes he doesn't. He doesn't have his wallet. He doesn't have any identification. He doesn't have his credit cards. I don't even think he had the tickets. And this is after 9/11, and in the the time range where we had cell phones, but I think it was before everything went electronic, where you could have your, just show your phone for your ticket and all that. So he didn't have the paper ticket. He didn't have ID. He didn't have anything he needed. So we needed to quickly turn around. He called my sister, his wife, to be like, listen, can you, find my wallet, find my tickets, get everything together, start driving south. We're turning around. We're driving north. We're going to meet in the middle. And I don't know, apparently he knew some landmark or some, gas station or a mall somewhere where we could stop. We meet my sister, he gets his wallet, his credit cards, his ID, the tickets and everything. We jump in the car. And at this point we are, we're not going to make the flight. Now I drive above the speed limit. But probably I get past as much as I do the passing. I don't think of myself as a speed demon, but in this case, I am, we're way late for my brother-in-law's flight. I am weaving in and out of traffic. I don't think I went on the shoulder more than once or twice to get around people, but I am, I'm channeling my inner Steve McQueen like I never have before, trying to get my brother-in-law to the airport. I am driving like a demon, like I've never driven before, trying to get him to the airport. We get there, and I think we get there. It's like 10 or 15 minutes before the scheduled time for the flight to take off. And that's not even getting there in time because he's still got to run through the airport and get through security and everything else. I hightail it. I drive as fast as I think I can safely without getting pulled over or killing us. I screech to a halt in front of, the terminal at the drop off. I don't even think I fully stopped before the doors open. He is leaping out of the car and he is sprinting into the airport. And I find out later they held the flight. I don't know if there was some other reason or if they were just waiting for him.
For him?
But he made it. He made it to the flight. But so another happy ending. But that was certainly a lot of adrenaline pumping, heart pumping. I don't think I've ever driven like that. I don't think I ever could again. I don't know how we made it to. I'm still amazed that he made the flight. But we did some fancy driving that day. That's wow. For sure.
Well, great story. Thank you. Thank you again for such a great story, Sean.
Well, thank you for humoring me.
Why not? I'm not humoring you. Not at all. I like hearing these stories.
Yeah.
Why are we doing the off the beaten track? Because we all want to hear about different people's experiences. Not everyone's experiences are like Neil's and Dill's. Let's hope not.
despite so many of my interesting travel stories involving flights, I will still fly. I still willingly fly on occasion. And oftentimes it goes according to plan and does not end up in a story that I can tell on a podcast. But there are plenty of times where it did. So there you go.
Apparently. All right. Do you want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with you?
So once again, I am from Next Scene Podcast. But before that, I did something similar to what you're doing with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I covered the movie Groundhog Day 1 minute at a time with our buddy Dave Pallas. And we called that Groundhog Minute. And you can find that at groundhogminute.com.
All right. And while you're doing that, and you can go rate and review and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. And you can find me at Movie Rob Minute on Facebook, on Twitter, on my website. All right, Sean, you want to come back in tomorrow?
Yeah, I guess my flight isn't boarding yet. So it looks like I have time. So, yeah, I would love to come back.
All right. Well, until then, you're
you're